No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this Monday edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox just wrapped up a four-game set against the Seattle Mariners, sweeping them 4-0. A Red Sox sweep, first of the year, and a four-gamer, no less. They are still currently fourth place in the American League East, 10 games back behind the New York Yankees, however, just 3 games out of the last wild card spot. Quick disclaimer, as always, for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. You can find me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining us tonight from the city of Providence, Rhode Island, back from his COVID-19 leave, looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, flexing in front of the camera, or maybe stretching, Charlie Smith.
It is good to be alive. yeah, let me tell you, it's been, COVID was a wild experience. I got sent home from work, and I said, literally, there's no way I have COVID. Like, absolutely not. I took a test when I got home, was good to go. Then I took a test a day later and I felt like a little scratch in my throat and I was like, nah, that's can't be anything. And the day after that, it got worse. And then I took another test on Friday and double pink barred twice. And I said, holy crap, this isn't happening. And I said, I feel fine. I feel all right. And then going in Friday night, I had like feverish symptoms, had the chills and whatnot for a couple of days, but still wasn't testing positive. And then all of a sudden, bang. And then my whole body shut down for like a week. Slept so much, didn't catch as much baseball as I would have liked, but I'm just much happier that I can, you know, chat with both of you gents and actually sound like a human being because my voice was completely gone. I couldn't talk. It was bad. So happy to be back.
And Charlie FaceTimed me on the, I think it was the first bad night. Charlie looked
I FaceTimed you?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
I don't even remember.
And you looked like crap. And I wanted to screenshot and mess with you a little bit, but I was like, no, I'm not going to do that.
That's how, so to be completely transparent, I don't even remember talking to you on the phone.
Yeah.
I was so bad. I was in and out of sleep. If I was up to go to the bathroom or have some food, that was an exhausting like activity to eat food. It was insane. Like there were some nights where I would just eat some chips and I would go to bed and I'd wake up. It would be, you know, 9:30 PM and I would wake up and it would be 11 in the morning, which is insane to sleep that much. But I literally couldn't do anything else. I'm just happy the Red Sox won. I'm feeling really good, you know, and I just got to get my, you know, get my weight back, 'cause I lost some weight.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. You looked so bad. You were so pale, and you were pretty out of it. And in my family, if anybody's ever in the hospital, you're getting roasted. You're going to be laying in your hospital bed, and you are getting roasted. And that's how savage we are. My brother is kind of a douchebag and rips people off for money here and there. And apparently, one time he took a tire iron to the face, ended up in the hospital. My parents sent me in there to check on him. I walk right into his room and the nurse says, "Who are you?" And I'm like, "Oh," I said, I'm his brother. And I took one look at him, see his whole face messed up. And I'm like, usually we look a lot more alike. he was laughing, but yeah. So I wasn't going to give you the Cushman family treatment, Charlie, but we do have a third host tonight, joining us from the nation's capital by way of Newport, Rhode Island, Job Goddard.
Well, I'm glad I don't look like Charlie. Thank God for that. I'm also glad that I haven't been on the show in 10 days, and we're 8-2. So maybe I shouldn't be on any more shows.
You're fired. You're fired.
Yeah. I mean, I missed a whole week. Like Terry, I texted Terry. I was like, I'm out. And I think, God, I want to say it was like 2 or 3 days notice, Terry. I don't recall what day I messaged you, but I was like, it's not happening. I don't have a voice. Like I'm out. And I just texted the group. Brutal experience. I know you and Andrew switched one show. And then we had a pinch hitter. Was his name Matt? Mark?
Mark Rollins, yeah, who did a phenomenal job. And
yeah, I liked him on the show. He did a good job.
He might be a solid bench guy going forward. Yeah, that was interesting because it was a totally different crew last Sunday. Just two Andrew swapping in. And Job, you're filling in this week. Is that right?
I am indeed. I'll be on the midweek show.
Okay.
Covering the Chicago White Sox series. Andrew was nice enough to allow me to go to my sister's graduation and not have to worry about getting back for a broadcast for a game I wasn't going to be able to see.
Yeah.
So that was fantastic of them, and they did a great job. I was able to catch that episode right before getting on the air here with you gentlemen. So I'm fresh and ready to compliment Andrew's takes, which is rare. As many of our listeners know, rarely do Andrew and I agree on a lot, especially when the Red Sox are losing. But we're 8-2 in our last 10, guys. Let's keep it up. Terry, the standings look pretty good right now, so I'm a very happy man.
It feels like, I mean, we've won, what, 6 out of 8, 7 out of 9, and we're eight and two
in our last 10.
Okay, so 8 out of 10, and we're still 10 games back. It just feels like we should be a little closer than that, but the Yankees, up until today at least, in the doubleheader, just don't lose. So we'll have to reel them in. I don't really care about the deficit between us and first. I want to get above 500. Let's focus on that and get, you know, maybe a few games above 500. And then, you know, then I'll start looking. I'll start scoreboard watching again and all that is how I'm looking at it. But Job, last time on the show, you wanted Bloom fired.
It was working. Something I said worked because he looked fired up today. I don't know how much of the game you two caught today.
I saw most of it.
We record on Sunday, but he was fired up with the Franchy Cordero grand slam to walk it off. They cut straight to Chaim Bloom. I still am not happy with Chaim Bloom. I still think we need a couple of bullpen arms short. I'm sure we'll talk about one of the arms that I think is coming as we get into the show a little bit. But he made one move that's going to make me a very happy man going forward, and that's sending down Brazier and getting the ace back on this staff in Michael Wacha. It's going to be the first to 5 wins. You heard it here second. I said it about 6 weeks ago on a show with Charlie, and I got laughed at. So I'm just going to keep those receipts. And it doesn't get much better than that, right? You send down Ryan Brazier, you get back Michael Wacha, you got some more healthy pieces coming, and all of a sudden your free agent signing second baseman is the best hitter on planet Earth. It'll make you look good for a couple of weeks for sure. So I'm still not happy with Chaim Bloom, but right now everything's coming up Red Sox, so I'll let things go.
All right, 4-game sweep. I mean, what a week. You know, you beat the Astros 2 out of 3, sweep the Mariners, and we got a couple of, the White Sox, that's not a cupcake series, but, you know, if you can somehow, by hook or by crook, win 2, you got a 5-game set against the Orioles because of a doubleheader. So, first 5-game set that I'm aware of. And then you got the Cincinnati Reds after that. So, definitely could be above 500, if not by the Sunday show next week, perhaps the midweek show after that. So, all right, let's get into, there's tons to get into this series, and it's all mostly positive stuff. Game 1, Rich Hill on the mound. Hill did not look good, only lasted a couple innings, but man, the Trevor Story explosion. Grand slam, 7 ribbies on the night, 3 home runs overall. I mean, he's arrived, and he continued to have a good series after that. So can we dump the Carl Crawford comparisons now, finally?
Well, the three of us weren't really the ones making those comparisons, right? Nor was our show. I want to point out a couple of things. One is that Trevor Story is the one guy that a lot of fans have been dumping on and hating on his performance that our show, both midweek and weekend shows, have continued to say he's coming because we know how talented he is. We were able to watch him in Coors and watch him with the Rockies for years. He's got serious talent, and right now everything is coming up Trevor Story. I mean, he is smoking the ball and pulling the ball to left, hitting the ball straight away to center, and he's running the bases like he's 26, and I love it. It's a jolt this offense needs, and especially when you have some injuries. There are guys that are not playing right now because of some back issues in Verdugo and JD Martinez. Those are two really big bats, and all of a sudden, you know, Trevor Story is the best hitter on the planet. It smooths over a lot of things. He is feeling himself right now, and he has said the right thing to the media every single time he's spoken to them since not speaking to the media after going 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts a couple of weeks back.
Charlie.
I'm trying to find the darn tweet I had where someone said, Trevor Story is a bust. We never should have gotten him. This isn't working. And I said, give him the second, third week of May. By June, he's going to find his stride. I guarantee it. You need to give this kid a chance. You need to do that. Jesus Christ, we've been giving chances to players last year who definitely didn't deserve it. We let people go who never deserved to be let go. But we gave Bobby Dalbec more than an inch. He took a mile. He still hasn't figured out. He needs to go. Franchi Cordero last year couldn't figure it out. He needed to go. Finally, this year, we're starting to see a little bit of what we're supposed to see from Franchi. But there's a whole boatload of players that have been given a boatload of leash. Michael Chavis was one that didn't get a real shot, and he's blossoming in Pittsburgh. He'll calm down a little bit, but he's still eons better than Bobby Dalbec. And Trevor Story, I mean, this week, Trevor Story justified why the Red Sox gave him the contract that he did, that they did. And what, you know, I'm going to be talking about Trevor Story later on, before the series conversation is over about my hot take on this. And there's going to be some people that think, no, Charlie, no, you're on it. You're on it. Ah, you lost me right there. But you know what? Numbers don't lie. And what Trevor Story was able to do, Trevor Story won the first two games of the series. Two homers in the first one. Then he has a three-run homer and then hits a grand slam the next day. Hits another one in the last day of the series. I mean, he can do no wrong right now. He's the hottest hitter in baseball, and it's not even close. He's averaging three RBIs a game. He's on fire. So I'm super pumped that he's been able to get it right. He was due. He was so due, it wasn't even funny.
I tweeted on the podcast account that Trevor Story's jersey must be the hottest selling in MLB this week. I don't know if there's a way to look at that, but I bet there's a lot of people buying them at this point. All winter long, I'm not going to harp on this much longer, but Story was my guy. I'm a value guy. I wanted Trevor Story because he wasn't going to cost nearly as much as what Carlos Correa was going to cost. Now, I don't know why he didn't get, you know, upwards of $300 million. He probably will next winter, but and Corey Seager did get a contract north of that. But how stupid do the Texas Rangers feel? They blew all that money on Corey Seager. Red Sox paid less than half, almost a third of what the Rangers paid for Corey Seager, and we got it in Trevor Story, and Trevor Story is raking. That's why I don't sign stupid contracts. Look at what Story is doing in the last couple of weeks compared to Mookie Betts. I don't have Mookie's numbers in front of me, but I bet they're pretty comparable. You win championships by signing contracts just like this. Just like this. And whatever the value signing is next year, that's what I want to do. We should have done it with Devers last winter when you could have had him cheaper. That's a different animal, but I like what I'm seeing out of Trevor Story. He never looked overwhelmed. He always looked like he was on the verge of breaking out. Even in that Golden Sombrero series, whichever one that was, and the series after that wasn't good. He had 11 strikeouts in two series. Well, in this series, he had runs in every game, 11, 12, 13 runs batted in this whole series. So absolutely insane. And I'm a big Trevor Story guy.
Can I read you some Trevor Story stats real quick?
Go ahead.
Okay. So in this season, he's hitting .226, 7 home runs, 29 RBIs, 5 steals. That's good for a .748 OPS. But in his last 7 games, this is the deadline Charlie talked about for giving him to get his stroke because no spring training. 25 at-bats, 10 runs scored, 9 hits, 6 homers, 14 RBIs, 5 walks, 4 strikeouts, 3 steals. That's good for a .360 average, .452 OBP, and .1120 OPS. .1120. That's second in the majors this year to Juan Soto.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, so Story had 2 stolen bases. Otherwise, your numbers were absolutely on point. I know this because I faced Trevor Story in fantasy this week and got crucified. It wasn't even close. Trevor Story is on Lori's team, and I know she tweeted about it. Lori had 6 home runs this week. Trevor Story had all 6 of her home runs this week. I lost, and I never thought in a million years that one player could will a fantasy win, and he absolutely did. Like, everything that could have gone right for Trevor Story basically did. A couple of stolen bases. I don't even know why we're bringing that up. Because he's done more in this week than Xander Bogaerts has done all year. Xander has 17 RBIs. And I know people are going to say, that's not the only metric that's important. You know what? Driving in runs wins games. And he's doing it in bunches.
And he's hitting almost 400 with runners in scoring position this season, it's, not just this series.
It's absolutely insane. Like, one of the numbers that they were talking about for Trevor Story was Trevor Story raises OPS from 613 to 746 in 2 days. In 2 days. And it kept on going up because the following day he had, another home run. He's on fire right now. Like, it's just, this man can do no wrong. Trevor Story has done more in Boston just this past week than Xander Bogaerts has done all year. And Xander is fighting for a contract. And this is the thing, like, Terry, you brought this up. Like, you really hope that Trevor Story has a really, really great year, because if he does better than Xander Bogaerts, it's going to be kind of hard to say, oh, you know, you didn't really live up to the Trevor Story train. On top of the fact, he's actually playing out of position to help you out. We're helping you again, because this is our shortstop. You're pretending to be. And if Xander were to play second and have Trevor Story over to short, I'd be curious to see even how much more damage he would do. Like, Trevor, clearly you've earned it to be our shortstop. We're going to flip you and Xander around.
Well, I don't advocate for that. Please don't think I do. I do want to say, generally, I feel like I come off a lot with similar takes than Tony Maserati of 98.5 The Sports Hub, who I know a lot of people in Red Sox fandom, they can't stand that he's so negative. One of his takes that I have that I feel a little bit like Charlie and I are the opposite of this. He was saying the other day, not on the show, not on the broadcast, but in one of his daily shows, that he kind of hopes that Trevor Story craters, has a terrible season, and the Red Sox are okay, so that they're forced to pay Xander Bogaerts. I want Trevor Story to do this. Like, can we get this for 6 years? Like, absolutely stunning production from Trevor Story. This was the best four-game stretch that we've had, and I'm going to say this without a doubt in my mind, since August of last season. Like, yes, we went to the ALCS. Yes, we played good baseball in October to get deep into a series against the eventual ALCS champs. But we didn't really look dominant for a four-game stretch at any point after September the way we looked tonight. I mean, we were competitive in all four of these games. They were come-from-behind victories in all of these games, and we capped it off with a great victory, a walk-off grand slam by a guy who hits .220 and who last year was an automatic strikeout. Everything this week came up Red Sox. I love it. Terry, I know you want to talk about this game by game, so let's get into it. There are some other things in game one that we should talk about other than Trevor Story, and there's some other things in the rest of the series that we should talk about as well. Was there anything that stuck out to you guys that wasn't Trevor Story in this series?
Yeah, well, Rich Hill again got into a hole. Tanner Houck came in, had his second straight decent outing, four innings pitched, only gave up one hit, one walk, struck out six. He hasn't had a high strikeout game in quite a while. I want to talk about him in a little bit, so we'll come back to him. John Schreiber had multiple.
That's my closer.
That's your closer. He was in the first three games and still has not given up a run yet. And this sample size is growing. It's not just a cute story anymore. It's like John Schreiber.
He did give up one run.
Did he?
In this series. I believe it was game three.
I'm not showing an earned run.
But I believe it was inherited from first base.
Oh, gotcha.
It might have been an error. But he did give up an earned run, unearned, in this series. That being said, John Schreiber, that's closer material right there. Read those numbers again, Terry.
Well, I was trying to look up the
I've got it here, actually. He's pitched in 10 games now, 10 and a third innings, 11 strikeouts, a 0.48 whip and no earned runs allowed.
Right.
One unearned run allowed.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So I want to see him a little bit more in high leverage. Hansel Robles today. I'm starting to have trust issues. He's been on a bit of a slide here, and we'll get into that in a little bit when we get to game four. But Schreiber just continues to shine, and I want to see him over Diekman as well. The guy's been impressive, and he came out of nowhere. He's a great story.
You can't say enough good things about what John Schreiber is doing. He's eating innings. He's pitching whenever Cora wants him to and as much as Cora wants him to. And he's dominant. He doesn't have one dominant pitch either. It's a lot of deception, which I know it means they want to choose their matchups. They're not going to give him the eighth inning every night. But it has been a fantastic storyline for this Boston Red Sox team. The underdog, really. They're embracing the underdog role. And I know that's upsetting to some of us who expect them to be a juggernaut every season. But maybe getting off to a bad start lit a fire under some guys. I like John Schreiber taking on a bigger role.
Like I said, he's a lot higher on my trust tree than anyone. Game two, Michael Wacha returned. Little bit rusty, wasn't super sharp. 4 2/3 innings. Gave up 4 hits, 2 earned runs, walked 3, struck out 3, but a very workman-like effort. Trevor Story, second grand slam of the series, kind of put the Red Sox up 4-0. And at that
time, team was tied at one point. They came back. Seattle came back and tied it 4-4. But getting a lead like that, feeling in control of a game, that's the first time I felt that this season. What a great start.
Yeah. Charlie, thoughts on Michael Wacha?
I know Job is really pumped about him. He really, really jumped on the Michael Wacha train. We're still seeing like a major like influx of pitchers that are having career years. What do I mean by that? Martin Perez is relevant. Do I need to say anything else? Like Martin Perez threw a shutout.
Hold on, you got to add some context. He shut out the Astros. He always dominates the Astros.
Okay, hold on just a second. Michael Wacha isn't the only pitcher that's having a career year. Like his ERA is 4 for his career. It's under 1.8 right now. His whip is usually 1.3 plus. It's hovering just over 1. So while I'm still not drinking the sauce on Michael Wacha. Wacha's got 3 wins so far in the year. I know that Joe really thinks he's going to get 5. He's going to be the first one with 5. Still don't think it's going to happen. I think he'll get 5 wins, but I don't think he'll be the first one. I would have loved to have seen him pitch to one more batter because he would have gotten it, you know, like this was potentially it, you know, one more batter and you're looking at 4-0. And then, yeah, maybe I am drinking the Kool-Aid and the punch on Michael Wacha. But no one was really talking about we've been talking about a couple of pitchers so far. I know Job has been riding the Schreiber train for a little bit, too. Like Terry, I need to see high leverage opportunities pop up for him. I don't have confidence in Robles anymore. I don't know what his issue is. It's just he's completely fallen apart. And before I make myself sound like a fool, like anybody else who thinks that Matt Barnes is back, Matt Barnes had one good game. One. That's it. One game. And people are saying, oh, the pitch is back. No, it's not. Let's not do that because it sounds silly. Matt Barnes just got his second save on the year. If I'm not mistaken, he ties for the team lead at 2. And we are almost in June. We still do not have a closer. There's still no deadlocked guy in the 9th. We still don't know who's pitching the 8th. Could Schreiber close out games? Sure. Should Garrett Whitlock be in the bullpen again? Yes. I'll say it again. Should Garrett Whitlock be in the bullpen again?
Yes.
Yes, he should. And I was super pumped to see Tanner Houck come out in game one, because when Hill kind of lost it, Houck came out and threw four innings, six strikeouts, allowed one hit, and was on it. He was absolutely on it.
I want to point something out to you, Charlie. Tanner Houck apparently has been spending time with Matt Strom and Jake Diekman. And Diekman has taught him a new grip for the slider that apparently has added some serious extra sweep over the last 2 weeks to his slider. Mm-hmm. And he credits that with his increase in strikeouts.
I don't care what he's doing. If he's going to give them credit, that's fine. As long as you can keep that level of consistency up. Because we, if I'm not mistaken, we only saw him pitch just the one game. I don't think he pitched again after that. He definitely didn't pitch today.
He did not. He didn't pitch
the last two. So that was it. They burned him in game one, and that's fine.
He will likely pitch again tomorrow.
Yeah, that was
the next day.
That was a four-inning appearance for Houck in the first game. And right. Garrett Whitlock had by far the worst outing of his season so far in game three. Only lasted three innings, gave up five earned runs on 10 hits, only struck out three, and he's been Mr. Strikeout Machine. So here's my question. Before we ruin Whitlock, is it time to face the fact that, yes, Tanner Houck is not vaccinated. Yes, we're going to have complications when we have to go to Toronto in late June and beyond that, and starting to fantasize about a postseason again, not going to lie. But should Tanner Houck go back into the rotation, where he has started to figure it out, the runs aren't being given up anymore, the strikeouts are back up, I would do it. And then with Whitlock in the pen, you got a lot less problems to figure out. And that's one less ninth inning that Matt Barnes might not be pitching. Charlie, go ahead.
What is the best thing for the Red Sox, Job and Terry, right now? Putting Garrett Whitlock back in the bullpen and putting Tanner Houck back in the rotation? Yes or no? My vote is yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. That is the end of the conversation. I don't even care about his vaccination status. I'm so tired of talking about that, because that to me is a cop out. You throwing a loss on one player is soft. It's soft. There are 25, 26, 28 guys, depending on the time of year. Yes, does it hurt us? Does it make us not as good? Sure. Is it the reason why we're going to lose a game? Absolutely not. We weren't hitting when we went to Toronto. Toronto's one of the best teams in the division, even though their record may not show that. They're still better than the Red Sox right now. While this has been a fantastic week, and we won four in a row against Seattle, remove Trevor Story from that picture. You've won maybe one game. So I'm not going to go ahead and say that this is the reason why, we're struggling. Houck needs to go back in to that rotation. Garrett Whitlock needs to be pulled out of it. Thank you, Garrett, for doing everything you did. I appreciate you putting the team on your back and doing everything you've been asked to do. But your role is in the bullpen, not in the rotation.
I get worried about an inverted Daniel Bard every time Whitlock goes out there. Daniel Bard has found himself again in Colorado. It took 5 years. Daniel Bard was the most electric eighth-inning pitcher the Red Sox had in the entire system. He was going to be the next Papelbon. He was going to come in and shut the door with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball from a funky arm angle. And then Ben Sherrington decided he was more important to try him as a starter and broke him. Garrett Whitlock has shown he can be the most dominant pitcher in the American League East for three innings a night. Why would you remove him from that comfort zone? It's not like you're losing, you don't have enough pitchers. We have enough guys. Tanner Houck can go in the rotation. if Tanner Houck were to go down, or, you know, I understand Michael Walker was hurt with the flexor strain, and you need a guy for a spot start, I understand it. That's why he's stretched out to three innings, four innings. He should not be facing guys every fifth day. In fact, I want fewer looks at Garrett Whitlock for every single player in the American League East. Because when he comes in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings, I don't want them to see him multiple times before that. So he can shut the door every time. I don't know necessarily that Tanner Houck needs to be in the rotation. I feel like there's other guys that could do that. I really want to see Connor Siebold with the big club. I think Winkowski's going to make a start in this Baltimore series upcoming. I want to see that. I want to see some of these young guys that are in the system that we've been talking about for 2 years now. Winkowski, remember, was the guy that we got back for Andrew Benintendi. Like, Cordero was the trade chip that we got in addition to Winkowski, who was the big prospect in that package. I want to see them. I want to see the young guys come up. One of those guys can start. Imagine if we have Whitlock and Houck both pitching behind guys, and then every game is shortened by three innings. Ideal. Ideal situation. We really need one of these big starters to come back. When Chris Sale comes back, I want both Houck and Whitlock in the bullpen.
Well, if it's going to be one or the other for now, because Sale just resumed throwing, I haven't seen a recent update on James Paxton, but he's weeks away, not days away. There's just
he's with the big league club, Terry. As of today, he's with the big league club.
He hasn't had a rehab start. Paxton?
Oh, he's still weeks away. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, okay.
A little bit of tidbit of news. He's hanging out in Boston, beginning his rehab in Boston rather than in Florida.
So oh, gotcha.
We're getting a little bit of news.
Going back to Houck and Whitlock, though, there's just a confidence that Houck carries himself with. Like, if he's in pressure, I feel like he's more likely to get out of the jam right now than Garrett Whitlock. Whitlock struggles to find the answers when things aren't going well and he's nibbling. And I think the league has had more looks at him. And excuse me, did not mean to burp live on the air. But I just feel like there's enough data on Whitlock right now, and teams have had looks. So this is kind of a result of that. And Whitlock's going to have to kind of make adjustments to their adjustments and try to find a way to keep them off balance. Houck, I love the confidence the kid has. And I'm not ready to say that he is not a starting pitcher and that he's got a better makeup as a reliever. I'm just not ready to go there yet. I want Tanner Houck back in the rotation. Job, go ahead.
You know, I want both of your opinions on this. Mostly I want to hear what Charlie has to say on this issue. I think the reason for what you're saying, Terry, about how Whitlock seems to nibble a little bit when he's getting into trouble recently is because he's trying to be too cute. He knows they want him to go three times through the order. So instead of just attacking guys with his electric first and second pitches, he's going to the third trick in the book, the third pitch that he has, and he's not as confident in it. And guys are getting hits off him because he's trying to be too cute. Whereas when he only has to face a guy once, he can empty the bag of tricks. He doesn't have to save something to show him in the fifth, sixth inning. He can use it all in that one inning that he's pitching or that second inning because he's not going to see the same guy again. And I think that makes a huge difference.
Go ahead, Charlie.
It's an interesting take. So you think because of the situation now, he's going to favor what pitch?
Well, I think right now he's using his secondary stuff more than his fastball because he wants to keep hitters off balance for more than one at-bat. When he's facing a guy for one at-bat, we've seen he'll just attack with the fastball and get you out with a slider changeup.
That's interesting. That's something to keep an eye out for moving forward. That's an interesting take. I like it. That is now something that I'm going to pay more attention to. So
it is what a lot of pitchers, they say starting pitchers need a third pitch, right?
Of course, you need three.
Instead of attacking hitters with your 1-2 punch of electric fastball changeup with the occasional slider that's wipeout, he's now nibbling because he doesn't want to use the slider as his out pitch so that he can use it in the second time facing that guy without giving him, you know, that point of view. And so guys are sitting on the changeup and they're hitting it and it makes him look vulnerable.
Right.
Game three. Despite the Whitlock stumbles, the bullpen did kind of gather it up and did not allow an earned run once Whitlock left the game. So good on them. If that was the complete game that I missed, I saw nothing of game three of the series. But if I was home and I saw Barnes coming out in the ninth, I would have lost my bleeping. You know what?
Well, I did. I lost my mind.
I just can't believe Alex Cora is putting him in high leverage. But let's not forget the fact Devers absolutely raked in game three, was 3-for-4, hit a couple of dingers. He's a different guy this year. Striking out less than 2021. I don't think he's going to win the MVP, but I think he's going to be top five. Maybe top three. This is a different Rafi Devers, and that contract he's going to sign goes up higher and higher with every ball that goes over the fence.
And there's going to be a lot of going over the fence. He's got 6 already. He might have 7, actually. I don't know if he hit one today. I wasn't paying too close
attention. Are you talking about Devers?
Yes.
Devers has 9 on the year.
9. Okay, so I missed a couple. I wasn't even counting this series.
You're fine. No, you're fine.
He's going to have 35 or 40 home runs.
I mean, Trevor Story was 5th on the team, and now he's 2nd by himself. You know, like he's up to 7 bombs and 29 RBIs. Someone will have to double check me on that. I'm pretty sure he's at 729 split. He's still hitting under 230. I don't believe that's wrong.
He's not. He's 229.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So Devers is absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. But here's the thing. When people were panicking on Twitter, Garrett Whitlock got cracked for 5 runs in 3 innings of work, and he just was not looking great. I didn't panic. I was like, we won 2 games already. Even if we split, this is a big win against Seattle. Seattle's a team that has always done really, really well against us. The first game, you saw Trevor Story basically put the team on his back. The second game, repeat, rinse and repeat, where he did the same thing again, where he hit a grand slam. We're down 5-0 going into the bottom of the third. I wasn't even stressed. I was like, we're probably going to make it. We'll get 1 or 2 runs before the 5th or 6th. Hopefully we can keep them at bay and keep them at 5. Guess what? We did. And then we scored 4 in the bottom half of the 5th inning, I think was game 3. Because that's when Devers went yard. And that made it a 2-run game. Was it Dalbec who had a single? I think Dalbec had a hit in that one too.
He did, yeah.
And then who does work again? Trevor Story hits a sac fly, and now we're tied 5-5. And the 5th inning isn't over yet. We are right back in this game. It is 0-0 going into the 6th. I am not looking at this as a negative.
Look at that.
What's up?
Look at that. You've changed so much in 6 days.
You know,
you just
need to get COVID, and then you see stuff a little bit more, you know, clearly. A little bit more clear. And that's the thing. Like, even in the messages today, guys, you guys saw my messages. I'm like, guys, if we lose today, we still took 3 out of 4. This is a win. You know, people, I don't know who it was that was saying, I blame Cora, I blame this, that, and the other.
Oh, that was me. That was me.
We won 3 out of 4 for the series. And then Franchi said, no, hold my beer. And we swept Seattle. So I'm not going in with the mindset of, oh, crap, you know, like this didn't go right. Because we've been doing that, you know, for a couple of weeks now, over a month, and things weren't looking good. And there was a proper reason for doing so. Yes, there were a couple of players that really put the entire team on their whole back. We're not even going to have a discussion on it because that's exactly what happened. Perception is reality, and that was reality. So I think we're going to keep riding the high. I think this series coming up is going to be interesting. But I mean, even if we don't do great in that series, the 2 series after that, we're probably playing 750 baseball. Well, so I feel really good about it.
I definitely want to keep the pedal to the metal. And I would have been a little sour after the game because Robles gave it up. I mean, we were that close.
With two strikes in the ninth inning. With 2 outs, 2 strikes.
Yeah.
That really got under my skin.
Brutal.
3 out of 4 games is a win in the series.
Three out of four. 3 out of 4 games is actually just a net game of 2. So it's a big swing. So it's either you either sweep them and it's a net gain of 4. Or you lose that one and it's a net game of 2 because 3 wins minus 1 loss. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, like, but a net of 2 is eons better than where we were a week ago. We weren't even here.
Oh,
we
my God. Charlie's here. On the Carrabba's Kool-Aid.
I'm not even on the Carrabba's Kool-Aid. But, guys, listen. We weren't even a team that deserved to be talked about. Like, this wasn't a team that even – dessert had any merit. Everything was wrong. Everything was bad. And now things are starting to look up. I'm going to ride the high right now. I refuse to be, I was negative for an entire week in bed, being miserable, hating everything, literally hating everyone and everything. I just am so happy to be talking about the fact that we won 4 in a row.
We won 5 in a row.
Against Seattle, we won 4 in a row. Like I'm happy. We're 8-2 in our last 10, if I'm not mistaken.
We are
8-2 in our last 10 and climbing fast. We're down to 10 games behind the Yankees for the division. I know Terry thinks it's early to be scoreboard watching. He'd be right about that. But I also about game 3 just for a second. How much fun is it to watch a game, Charlie, and go down 4-0 and not feel like you're out of it? Like I haven't felt like that in so long.
I haven't felt like that since 2004 World Series where we're down 0-3, and I'm like, you know what? Let's just have fun.
Just win one. Just win one.
And then, you know, tomorrow so-and-so is going out there, and, you know, don't worry about game 3. Game 3, they get this part. That was my mentality because what's worse than the bottom of the barrel? Well, we were already there.
You're not wrong. I fully have to own up to my takes on an episode 2 weeks ago where I declared the season – basically dead and said it's time to trade Xander Bogaerts. It's not time to trade Xander Bogaerts. I need to stop panicking so quickly. And instead, it's start looking for an addition. If we can win a couple more series here, if we can play 750 baseball over the next 2 series, we could be all of a sudden 3 games over .500. And then start looking for an addition for the bullpen. And that's the next big step. But holy good God. Can we talk about how good Jackie Bradley Jr. has been at Fenway this year?
No.
I hate giving Jackie Bradley credit.
I don't want to talk about Jackie Bradley. Hang on real quick. I just want to point this out. Bradley did have a good series. Job's right. I hate that name. Anyway, Josh Donaldson hates the name Jackie apparently too. we're not going to touch that one. But the cool thing about the first 3 games here is the starting pitching had been so good coming into this series and the offense had been so bad. And in those first 3 games, the starting pitching, not so good. The offense finally comes through and basically wins the day. Hill, like I said, just 2 innings. Waka wasn't super sharp. And of course, Whitlock. So you definitely had some big contributions in the lineup. Christian Vasquez was a hero this series with some timely hits, especially today in the late extra innings. That only went 10. Yeah, so that just went 1 extra innings. First extra innings win of the season. But that was also game 4, the one pitching performance that was stellar. Because in his last one, Nathan Eovaldi got absolutely slapped around. Only lasted, 1 2/3 innings, something like that. Comes out today, 6 2/3 innings, 4 hits, only 2 earned runs, which was a cheap home run. Or was that the... I might be.
Oh, it was a Fenway home run, but I don't know if it was cheap is the right word.
That was the pesky pole one. Yeah,
the pesky pole one.
Yes, exactly.
Fenway home run.
Yeah,
I actually thought Jackie could have caught that ball.
Well, I don't know. It was a.
It hit off the wall and right. If it hits off the wall, that's 6 feet high, not even 6 feet high. Jackie should catch it.
I thought it was a couple rows in, but I wasn't looking too closely. Anyway, 11 strikeouts, a career high 11 strikeouts for Nathan Eovaldi. That was good to see because he got thumped so bad against the Astros, a team that he typically is fairly solid against. So love to see that from Nathan Eovaldi. And, of course, Franchi, grand slam.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know how many times we hated on Franchi last year. I want to say it was...
How many shows we do?
Under 20?
Yeah. How many shows we do? It was every show.
There was... All right, so what was it? I think it was, 3 years ago, the player that I hated more than anybody was Matt Hall. Right? I think it was 3 years ago. Was that 2019? 2019 was the Matt Hall year that I couldn't stand Matt Hall.
No, 2020. 2020 was Matt Hall.
That's right. I'm sorry. Thank you. 2020 was the Matt Hall year where every single time you even heard the name Matt, your eyes would like kind of twitch and get like all messed up. That was the Matt Hall year. 2021 was Garrett Richards, and I was done. I was done. He was my – what was the line I had? Matt Hall was my dud every week. Garrett Richards was my dud for the year. Like just awful. He was that – I think that was what it was. I'm not 100% sure. And I will be the first – I won't be the first one because I don't think I'm the only one that as soon as Franchi Cordero's name got uttered as a potential candidate to come up to Boston, there were a couple of groans of, damn it, he's coming back. But he's been really hitting the ball hard, like hard. And he had a couple of them that got absolutely smoked. And the home run, I don't believe, was the hardest hit ball today. And this is something that Andrew brought up because I didn't have the numbers in front. So we'll credit Andrew with this one. He's smoking balls. He's smoking shots. And he's just barely missing. So this one was just perfect. Because if we had a gun to our head and somebody said, okay, Franchi Cordero, game-winning grand slam, does he have it in him? Not one of us would have said yes. Not one. Now people are going to be looking at him a little bit differently because this isn't like the, shot in the, flash in the pan, finally hit a home run. This is someone who, if he can continue to keep that angle and that launch, Cordero could be exactly what we expected Bobby Dalbec to do. Or maybe he could do something a little bit less than what we thought Dalbec was going to do of 30 home runs. Because Dalbec, as far as I'm concerned, you can put a fork in him. He's done. So at this point, you can package him up with whatever you want. If a team is absolutely desperate, maybe they'll take a flyer on him. Otherwise, this might be the end of Bobby D, at least in Boston. It's just not going to happen. And the only thing that could potentially save Bobby Dalbec is the memory of Andrew Benintendi because we gave up on him too soon, and now he's a singles and doubles machine in KC. If Bobby Dalbec can change the way that he does everything, then maybe something happens. Maybe something changes. But right now, I mean, live in the moment, be happy that things went well, because if Franchi Cordero is going to be getting pitches like that, they're all going to be gone.
Well, he has what I like to call red seat power.
It's insane.
He is a football player. He plays baseball. He is a tight end. Play for the New England Patriots next week. And instead, he hits baseballs 500 feet. I'm not going to lie. I was watching that game. I was with my cousin. He went down 0-2. I reached out to take the remote, turn the game off, knowing that he was about to strike out, and I wasn't going to watch the 11th inning because I was disgusted with the managing to not pinch hit for Bobby Dalbec in the bottom of the ninth with literally anyone. And I thought it was over. Franchi Cordero just gave us a big moment. And then he hit us with the energy is changing in his post-game press conference. which is a Jackie Bradley Jr. thing to say, but it's also a quote from Jaylen Brown, who said it for the Celtics in January, and now they're in the playoffs. So maybe this Red Sox team, who, by the way, is all wearing Celtics jerseys on their trip to Chicago, they're decked out in full Celtics uniform, shooting sleeves and all, photos tweeted by some of the beat reporters. They're kind of channeling some of that dog energy, and I like it. I'm ready for it. I want this team to succeed so bad. In fact, I want everyone on this team to succeed, except I'm done with Bobby Dalbec. Bobby Dalbec needs to go. Him and Haim can get on the same bus together to Double A Portland.
So I was the one, allegedly, per Job, that was drinking the Carrabba's sauce, whatever, and now it sounds like you're starting to sound a little positive. It's actually kind of disgusting.
As long as there's no Bobby Dalbec in the lineup, I can be positive. But I'm upset with Cora for the way he managed that game. I thought he should have pinch hit for Bobby in the bottom of the ninth.
This is a really important.
I also thought Plawecki or Vasquez in the bottom of the tenth. I know it worked out. Whoever it was going to be, I thought they should have bunted. It didn't. Obviously, worked out. I'm going to nitpick because that's who I am. And this team has a legitimate closer, I think they have Matt Strom. Until they start using Matt Strom as the legitimate closer, the bullpen's not strong enough.
Are you going to begin looking at job applications on your Twitter handle again? Have we gotten back to that point?
I think we're pretty close. If we can get a 4 of 5 from Baltimore, not this series but the next, and don't get swept by Chicago, I will take job applications.
That is my gauge, Terry, by the way. I'm curious to know where Job is with that, because that was the telltale sign of Job just completely just titanicking. That was it. You know, like just it's over. The world is over. Baseball is dead. And I'm not doing job applications. At least now we're entertaining it.
You got to stay balanced in a long season. And I certainly didn't think we would have a resurgence like this, certainly in the month of May. But we have. Real quick, though, here's my Dalbec take. I might have given part of it on the midweek show last week. But if he's giving you nothing at the major league level, which he is, and Jonathan Araúz could be called up, probably give you a little bit more than nothing, at least put Dalbec down in AAA to try to get him right. Just try to get him right. It's not doing him any good going up to the plate and doing nothing but failing. And I love what we're seeing out of Franchi. I love the fact he's not a strikeout machine like he used to be. But I don't know if he's ever going to be facing lefties on a regular basis. So I can't sit here and say that Franchi should be our everyday first baseman or taking time away from Jackie Bradley necessarily in right field. But Franchi, we don't know what he is, but I think the less Dalbec, the better. And get him down in AAA. Maybe he boosts his trade value a little bit by doing that. And he can come up and be somewhat serviceable in the second half.
I don't think it'll happen. In fact, I don't want it to happen because we know he'll rake at AAA. He loves to hit fastballs that are 92 miles an hour or lower. He'll absolutely dominate at the AAA level once again. And then he'll get another chance with the Red Sox, strike out another 100 times before we finally give up on him. I'm all done with that.
Give him the at-bats.
Just ride the bench for somebody else, hit the waiver wire, get the hell off my team.
He's the guy that I think really not needs doing to any good, play, though.
The guy who needs to go to AAA, I think, is Christian Arroyo. He's really, really struggling. It's an under-the-radar situation developing with the Red Sox. He's hitting 186. I know he had a home run in this series. It was a big home run, in fact. But he's really struggling. And if he doesn't get it going, maybe he needs more regular playing time. I'm not sure what it is. But he could really benefit, I think, from seeing pitches every day. So maybe AAA might be a good stop for him for a couple of days.
I don't know what the long-term solution is for Bobby Dalbec. Unfortunately, I think, again, like I mentioned, the only thing that's keeping him in Boston right now, or as a member of the Red Sox, is the aura and the fact that we gave up on Andrew Benintendi, and Benintendi lit up the next year. The only good thing that came out of that was, you know, for the lack of a better term, was Franchy Cordero coming and doing what he's doing so far, at least in this, just this year, because last year I was not happy. I was not happy. I didn't think that we got enough of a return as far as that was concerned, but granted, we gave up on Benintendi. So the fact that we got anything, great. We were done with him. I don't know what to do with Dalbec. At this point, it's just, it's really frustrating. It really is. Every single time he comes to the dish, yes, Job, I know that you wanted to pinch hit for him and whatnot, but were we really thinking that we were going to win this game? Did we think that we were going to actually win it if we had pinch hit for Bobby D? I think it was more along the lines of Alex Cora is trying not to completely shatter this kid's mind. Like his, you shatter his confidence even more than it already is if you take him out. Like, okay, cool. Yep, Bobby, we're taking you out because we know you can't do it. That's the message that he would have sent.
He's hitting 150. He's got that message. My message delivered.
You know what, though? Last year, how many opportunities did Franchy Cordero get? How many opportunities did he get?
A lot.
And then there was another number after a lot. And then there was Franchy Cordero. That's how many opportunities he got. And I think Alex Cora right now is trying to remain consistent. Why are certain people getting certain shots? Other people not getting any more. I think he's trying to stay consistent. You know what? Franchy Cordero got as many as he did. He got sent down. And so far, he's adequate, for lack of a better term. Like, he's starting to make things work. My hope, my thought process is that that's what he's trying to do again, this time with Bobby. Shot in the dark.
I have no idea. Just, he's giving us nothing, and he's not going to find
He's not
it.
A defensive upgrade either. I mean, Franchy's playing okay at first base.
Give me anybody. Give me anybody in Pawtucket. I'll take Jonathan Araúz until Tristan Casas is ready. We're not getting it from Dalbec, and I don't want the automatic outs. It's just,
what's Araúz right now? How's he doing in AAA? Do we have his numbers? Let me look it up.
Yeah, I don't have it either.
Give me Jaron Duran.
I'm looking up Araúz right now because I'm actually curious because I don't.
I don't think he's doing well. Basically, got it right here.
All right, AAA, here we go. He's 10 for 47 with 3 doubles, no home runs, no RBIs. He's hitting 213.
60 points ahead of Dalbec. Sign me up.
Okay. Fair. I mean, that's fair. If that's your justification just to get a better bat on it, then okay. Because Bobby Dalbec right now is hitting, what is it, 147?
160, I think. But
yeah. Okay. He's got one home run on the year, if I'm not mistaken. Just one.
Yeah.
Against the Yankees.
It was a big
one. Yeah, that was the game that everyone's like, oh, Bobby Dalbec won the game for the Red Sox.
It was a big one.
He did, but it was one game.
All right, guys, let's just get into the series thing. We're already at the one-hour mark. So the series preview with the Chicago White Sox. That's a three-game set starting on Tuesday. So Monday tonight, an off night. We got a kind of a fun matchup on Tuesday. Nick Pivetta, who's had a few good starts in a row, including the last one, which was a complete game, versus Dylan Cease, who was kind of a popular Cy Young pick. Charlie, how do you have that one going? You're on mute.
So Cease was my guy before the year started. I thought Cease was actually going to win the Cy Young. He was my pick. I still am very, very confident in him. He's got an ERA that's just over 3. I think this is probably the game where I'd love to say Pivetta, but Pivetta's also due at this point to give up 5 or 6 runs in a game. Chicago is also a very formidable opponent. And the Yankees kind of did something really good for them because now they're done facing Chicago. But they completely upset one of the leaders on that team. We don't have to talk about why, because I really don't want to waste my time talking about it. I think what Donaldson did was really stupid. But you woke up the bear. You poked the bear. You upset this team. They're already not in first place. This is a game that this is actually just a series that we're going to have to worry about. It. They're four games out of first place. Minnesota is somehow in first. I don't understand it, but it is what it is. I'm going Dylan Cease because I think he's one of the most underrated pitchers in baseball. So
I'm also going Dylan Cease. He's too good.
He's a stud.
He's an absolute stud. It's unfortunate that we're going to run into the buzzsaw that is Dylan Cease in game one because I still think it's a winnable series, but I'd really like a win streak to keep going. I just don't think that we have it against Dylan Cease. His go-to pitch is a fastball upper 90s with a slider that disappears on you. I mean, he's got one of the best sliders for a starting pitcher in the game from the right side. And I think he might strike out 10, maybe more. It's gonna be a good series. I'm not excited to watch that game though. I think that's gonna be wake up time, return to reality for Red Sox fans after a really big high.
Well, Cease has an average of 9 strikeouts in his last 3 games, coming off a 5 2/3 innings appearance against the Royals, gave up 7 hits. No earned runs in that one. However, 5 days before that against the Yankees, only lasted 4 innings, gave up 6 earned, still struck out 11, but still got slapped around a little bit. And then 3 starts ago was actually against the Red Sox, went 5 innings, gave up 4 hits, walked 3, struck out 8, 1 earned run, actually. I skipped that one. So this will be the second recent look that the Red Sox have had against Cease. And I'm gonna be the optimist here. I'm gonna ride the hot hand. The Red Sox have some momentum. Not that the White Sox don't, especially after a doubleheader sweep today against the Yankees. But I think the Red Sox are firing on all cylinders, and I like what I've seen out of Pivetta. So put me down for the Boston Red Sox in Game 1. Game 2, Rich Hill versus Lucas Giolito. Giolito has had some injuries on the season, but he's 2-1 with a 2.84 ERA. Rich Hill, no momentum whatsoever. Hasn't looked great, well, at least in his last time out. So, Charlie, how do you have game 2?
Well, really quickly, I appreciate the fact that you're going to ride the hot hand and say that the Red Sox are going to take one game one against Chicago. I have Chicago winning game 2. And even though I don't have the Red Sox winning this series, I'm still on the hot streak because this is a much better opponent than any of the opponents we faced. I think that Houston, people are still really high on them. I think Houston is way overplaying right now. I think they're garbage. I didn't pick them this year for the show. I didn't think they were going to win the AL West. My team was the Angels, and they were in first for a while. I still think they'll figure it out and get back in there. Unfortunately, though, you have Lucas Giolito, who's a Cy Young contender, against Rich Hill, who can't pitch 5 innings. So, you know, I mean, has he done it? Yes. But can Giolito pitch 5 innings? Yes, every appearance. So look for Giolito to go probably 6+ against the Red Sox, and with an arsenal of players behind him, I say Chicago wins game 2 as well. Joe?
Well, I actually think the Red Sox have a good shot at game 2. I think Rich Hill is much better than people give him credit for. He's been given the early hook by Alex Cora a couple of times when I thought he really had it working, including a perfect game through 5 in Baltimore against the Orioles and getting the hook there. I just think that if Tanner Houck is working and that's the piggyback they're going to go with, it's possible we win that game. Now, one quick stat to mention, this White Sox team over the last 2 years, they have a lot of the same hitters. They're only getting better. They play about 700 baseball against left-handed pitching. This is not a good matchup for us. Rich Hill to Tanner Houck, and then who? All of our arms are lefties. Maybe Schreiber. Maybe we see Robles again. But it's going to be tough, I think, with Rich Hill not having overpowering stuff to get a win here, unless we see lights out Tanner Houck. I don't have a lot of faith in Giolito. His fielding independent pitching has been off the charts. That'll come down at some point. And I also think this Red Sox offense is going to be frustrated by Dylan Cease. I don't think they'll be frustrated by Giolito. I think Giolito's a good matchup for them. I think Rafi Devers goes yard in that game. And I think it's going to be a big win for the Red Sox to keep us in this. We're going to have a chance to win the game, the rubber match in game three.
I'm taking the White Sox in game two. I just don't have a ton of confidence against with Rich Hill. And I think their bullpen will kind of prevent some rallies that we've been kind of getting spoiled by over the last week. So I'm going to take the White Sox in game two. Game three, I had to switch over to ESPN because the regular site has that as TBD for Chicago. ESPN has Vince Velasquez starting that game against Michael Wacha. Velasquez looked pretty good against us in his recent outing in the previous series, and not having a great year, but looked good against us. We got swept in that series, by the way. So yes, Charlie, how do you have that one?
I got Job's boy winning game three. So I don't say Chicago's going to sweep us. I think Chicago will take two out of three. Again, like I mentioned, though, I'm not looking at that as a negative because Chicago is a really, really good opponent. And they have multiple Cy Young candidate pitchers in peak form. So I don't think Vince Velasquez is going to get to tune us up twice. He's done decent. And he's a five innings guy. Wacha is pretty much the same thing. On average, we're going to get about five innings of work out of him. I just feel that there's going to be some late inning magic. There's going to be one game where there's magic, and this is the game where we have the highest probability to do that. So I'm going to say that we win game three. We still lose the series, but we still play really, really well, and it warms us up for what will be a bloodbath of opponents coming up. We're winning a lot.
I hate this, Charlie, because I'm not taking my boy in the rubber match here. I think Vince Velasquez gave us fits in the first game. He's, as Terry points out time and time again, he's the kind of guy who gives us fits. He's like a mediocre to below average starting pitcher, doesn't have overwhelming stuff, and the Red Sox strike out 8-9 times. It's frustrating as hell, happens every year. It's like the Andrew Heaneys of the world. They really frustrate us. Vince Velasquez falls into that bag. But I think it's going to come down to relievers. I think we're going to have to go through a lot of relievers with Rich Hill going in the first game, or the second game, rather. And Liam Hendricks is dominant, and I don't trust our bullpen. I think we might blow this one late, and it's going to be April all over again in this one. We're going to lose this series 2-1. We're going to win the middle game, which is the game that both of you think we're going to lose. But I do think we're going to play well. I think Charlie's right. It's just going to be two very close losses.
I'm going to take the Red Sox in game three for a series win, 2-1. I think the Red Sox will kind of go to town on Velasquez this time around with the recent looks at him. And I don't think he'll be nearly as effective. The only thing that gives me pause is what kind of baseballs are we going to be using that game? Because if they're of the juiced variety, Michael Wacha might give up some dingers being a pitch to contact guy. So The change in baseballs kind of makes me nervous with him because he was thriving on the dead baseball. And I think that's part of the reason why he's had such a great start. So we'll see. But I think the Red Sox have good momentum. I think we can win this series. I hope I'm right. We got swept in the last one. But we will wrap on that. Everybody have a good Monday. Hot Take Tuesday will be tomorrow for your AM commute. So stay tuned for that. Take care.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help. You save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.